Welcome to the Open Hearted Podcast. And welcome to the Open Hearted Podcast. I'm your host, Will Wheeler, joined with my main man, Photon John. What's going on, brother?
Yeah, another Monday, another dollar. How about yourself?
Another Monday, another dollar. Man, so prior to getting our guest on, we've had a few technical difficulties there, and we apologize if we're running 3 minutes late, but we're here. We're ready to rock and roll. But Kev, what's been going on this week, mate?
Just plodding away at the business, quiet life, post-tour, not a whole lot to report. How about you?
Besides the fact that my partner almost burnt the house down last night, doing pretty good, busy with Neurodiversity Academy, got some really cool stuff happening there. Mm-hmm. Besides that, it's sort of been just a bit chilled. I actually went to like this thing called the Men's Table the other day that's for gets men together, and we just get onto a table, have some dinner and talk about some stuff. That was really good to get out. But, besides that, it was really cool. Not too much to sort of talk on, but I tell you what, we should really get stuck into this because we've got a really good guest up coming up today. So what we're going to be covering today is, and I just had it up, here we go, gaming/safe spaces for the neurodiversity community. And we're with our main man, Dwayne Fernandez. So let's get him up on the screen. Dwayne, the main man's in the house. What's going on, brother?
How we doing, everybody?
Good. Yeah, good, man. Good. Sorry, I'm just trying to get everything sorted. Here we go. Dwayne, man, how close were we there just before trying to get everything ready?
Last minute technical dramas, right? That's what happens from time to time.
That's live broadcast for you.
Yeah, totally. But you know what, right? Like, that was why we did like, so for a lot of our listeners, we usually jump on 15 minutes prior to we're about to start for that reason. So Dwayne's actually coming from his phone. I'm so glad it actually runs from people's phones. But, Dwayne, you're looking great, my man.
Thanks.
But before we get stuck into this, we might just do some housekeeping and that. So for all of our listeners, if you're listening through today, please subscribe, like, and follow to all of our social media platforms. You can follow us on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, LinkedIn, and we are now available on Thread as well. If you're not on Thread, definitely jump on it. I'm going to have to try and fit that in there somewhere. And also, too, if you want to subscribe to our website, please visit openheartedsociety.com, where you can check out all of our latest podcasts and check out some of our cool blogs. So let's get stuck into this. We've got a few people have already sort of greeted. I'm not sure if these are some of your friends, my man.
Maybe not.
Maybe you got a big following here. So, Dwayne, you know, you're doing some really awesome stuff, especially around gaming, around neurodiversity, all of that. We've had some really awesome chats about all the great work you're doing. But, you know, before anything, you've got a really amazing story, and, you know, we'd love to hear a bit more about yourself.
Sure. So me, I'm a double amputee, missing a few fingers, missing a few feet. Been working basically in the state government for about 10 years now. And somewhere around like the 4 or 5 year mark, I got myself up to like a reasonable level. And I started to ask myself, where are my people? Like, where are other people like me in organizations like this, right? And when you ask questions like that and you start asking them to, you know, management and things of that nature, they tend to give you the job to fix it. And so suddenly I became the chair of an Enable network, which is a disciplinary employment network. And from there, I got lucky enough to start focusing on improving society for my community, people with disabilities in general, right? So that's a little bit about how I've started, but we can get to a bit more on that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, you know what? You know, it would be sort of, you know, strange sort of working in an environment where, you know, there aren't people like yourself type of thing, you know. And when you sort of started to get into that, what were some of the things that you did, and what's some of the change you've actually seen happen since?
Oh, yeah. So when they gave me the keys to the Enable network, I created a peer support safe space in our organization. And that Enable network grew from 50 members who registered to now over 300 by the time I left and moved to the next department. It is now sitting at about 500 people with disabilities, carers, and allies. And the whole point about that is that it became a safe space that people can share how they feel, how they're engaging, and other people in that safe space can share how they're dealing with certain situations. And what that really helped people do was they could feel that if I shared my situation, somebody might have some strategies that could work well. And that model of peer support safety is something that I learned at the Amputee Association of New South Wales, where basically before people would get their limbs amputated, they would call amputees such as ourselves to come and have a chat with them. Because losing a limb is a pretty big thing for most people. And so if you can see what the future looks like on the other side, you kind of survive that process a bit more. And so we know the value of peer support safe spaces and making sure that you can, you know, express your emotions and someone hears you and like just genuinely hears you. Even if things don't change, at least they hear you.
And you probably find you're getting a lot of people who are coming forward as well, who maybe never thought they had that support and all that. Now, just out of curiosity, is this safe space that you created, is that only available within your workplace? Like,
so that one was specifically an employee resource group in transport for New South Wales. There are a lot of other state-based ones. But as you kind of go through the process of going, cool, we're making, you know, government and large organizations safe places for hiring people with disability. How do we get, and there's always going to be a gap, right? There's always going to be a gap between, yeah, you can come through, you know, an interview process that's a little bit easier or a little more aligned to your disability type. But how do you make it so that you, even if you don't get that opportunity, how do you make it that you can practice the skills you need to get past that barrier? And that's where Minds of Play comes into mix, right? So
yeah, cool. So, you know, just talking about that, we might as well get into, you know, a little bit of the work you are doing in, you know, the neurodiversity space, because, you know, I think, you know, we've spoken about this in the past and, you know, creating those safe spaces or even finding those places where you're connecting with others similar to yourself is so crucial. So, you know, please tell us a little bit about the work you're doing around neurodiversity, your business and all of that.
Sure. So Minds of Play started in 2019, and it started at the height of a pandemic. And we just asked a simple question. Does Dungeons & Dragons, as a program, would that help neurodiverse people process their, you know, emotions, manage their creativity, allow them to work together and collaborate and conflict, do all these wide variety of things? And the reason that question was asked is because I was using Dungeons & Dragons on a Wednesday night with my buddy Dan in state government as an outlet to express my own emotions, because I was dealing with a boss that I did not like. And for 2 years, I played that boss as a character. And what I found was that as I was playing that person, as a character, I did not get into as many arguments with them in the workplace. I understood their, I understood what they were going to do and how they're going to do it, because I was role playing them as a wood elf ranger, and and I was practicing how they would approach situations, and that triggered for me. It's an empathy building tool. Even for someone that you don't like, you can have empathy for them. And at the same time, my godchild, I became a godfather. And when I became a godfather, I got, my godchild had autism. And I was asking the question, how can I help him build up his skills and his ability to interact with people so that he can land those jobs and get what he needs to do? Because it's never the actual skill of the work, right? The work, the community is always amazing at it because we hyper-focus and we hyper-fixate and we're the experts on everything there. But getting it summarized and dealing with the neurotypicals, that's where the work is. We need a little
bit of help. It is a bit difficult. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And so this is where D&D comes in. And I'm sitting there working through the process for my NDIS as I'm trying to get my legs, and we see something called innovative social participation. I'm like, hey, Dan, does this sound like D&D to you? And it's like it sounds like D&D to me. And with that, we put up a few pitch decks. We tried to apply for a couple of grants, failed at grant writing. And as a pandemic started to rage, we ended up speaking to this awesome organization in Penrith, called Luke Pritis Foundation. And they had just lost all their in-person groups. So basically all that time in people that they would have to in the center all disappeared on them. And we said, we could do D&D online. And this was Jeff. Jeff said, hey, why don't we try to do this online? And we figured it out. A couple of camera setups with the actual minis. We got around the table and we ran a session. And that session, that first 2 hours with these four, I'd say kids, but some of them have been playing with us for 4 years now. They're adults. But the first 2 hour session, the support coordinator was sitting there. And after they all left, like, I knew nothing about autism or ADHD. I was just like a newbie at that stage. I thought these were just ordinary kids playing D&D with us. And when the support corner left saying, I have never seen these boys interact the way that I've just seen. And when you suggested how you're going to make contact with each other and talk to each other outside of the game because you want to make plans in the game, they're like, I'll create a Discord. They've never done that before. And they've known each other for years.
Yeah.
Proved itself in the first 2 hours.
We
had to build this company.
Yeah, no, that sounds like, you know, you've sort of built, you know, and I think this is the thing, the, you know, because our next question was like, what enticed you to start doing this work? And I think you sort of answered that before with like, the pandemic, all of that type of stuff. But it's amazing how something like that has been able to really, I suppose, help open up, you know, these types of, I suppose, initiatives to help others really to thrive in the, you know, in certain situations. Kev, was there something you wanted to say on that, mate?
Yeah, so I was wondering sort of with regards to where you're sort of at now, and I guess this next question will answer it. How are you finding that's helping them outside of the game in their life in general, not necessarily just with each other and the people they play with, but just in their general day-to-day?
Yeah, with that in mind, yeah, so when we were looking at the space and trying to figure out how we do these programs, we asked the question, how can it help, right? And what do we need to monitor and observe? And so when we were working with Luke Pritis Foundation for the very first year, we sat there and listened to the psychologist and the, you know, support workers who would sit in our chats and sit in our Zoom sessions. And we'd ask them, what do we need to report on? What's important? And we talk about, well, eye contact is one of it. Watching people's social interactions in these different spaces, picking up on the social cues that are being placed by neurotypicals in certain ways. And how they're collaborating. Are they engaged? Are they communicating? And so we started writing reports, and we were writing reports in a way that explained, Were they on camera? Yes. Were they using their voice or were they using text? Were they, and how they progress over a 10-week program? And by writing these reports up, we started to notice some interesting patterns. Like in even a two-hour session, we'll run something where we say, hey, what do you want to do? And initially, there'd be cameras off with the sticky tape over their face and like just using text. But as the game is raging and we're completely ignoring them on their interaction on the camera, we are saying, hey, what do you want to do with this character? Do you want to run in with a javelin? Do you want to run in with a giant axe or throw a javelin? And we give those prompting questions. And so they give us one-word answers. But then literally half an hour to an hour later, we'd say, well, what do you want to do? And our questions are becoming a little bit less. And therefore, the content comes from them. And suddenly, there's a control over their character. They want agency of their character. And so if you're going to start doing things with their character without them doing it, they want to give you more and more information. And that's how we start to see them talk, to the point that in our first sessions, we'd see people coming in dressing up towards like their characters on session. And it was beautiful, right? You're role-playing these things. And I met these boys 1 year after the fact. I hadn't met them physically. I met these boys 1 year after they were playing with us, just to meet them in person, say thank you for playing with us, and gave them a bunch of cool D&D stuff. And OG Toby I met in person, and he was having a conversation with me. And it was like not over the top eye contact, but not kind of looking into the ether and things like that. Like, wait, how are you doing this? I asked that question. Oh, this is very simple. I just have imagine a Zoom frame around your face. I'm like, okay, cool. Tools that you now have that you're dealing with the neurotypical world that you can utilize. And it doesn't feel like it's over the top. We're not here about masking. We're not here about all this stuff, just genuine interactions. And that's what we saw. And that was just one example. And you don't need to be, right next to them in the same room. You can literally be kilometers away. Our players are 447 players this term, are all of them running D&D and Minecraft and now mini painting, are all in weird regional and metro areas. And sometimes we meet them only for the first time after a year of play when we call them to like a D&D event or something of that nature.
Yeah, cool.
And it probably feels like you're all... And it probably feels like you already know each other and all that type of stuff as well. It's just like social media, right?
Yeah, it's when you do it correctly, right? When you do it in a nice safe space where you can be your genuine self without being, you know, being authentically criticized by other people. People are there for your safety. You see some like absolute beautiful changes in people and the confidence that comes out. It translates so beautifully to the workplaces and other areas. We actually limit how much they play with us. So one of the cool things that you'll see is that when we're playing D&D or Minecraft, we only give you one table of it. Now, why would I do that? Why would a business owner who wants to make money limit the amount of players and the amount of thing? It's because I want you to go and find it in the real world.
Yeah, so they're going out and finding more people, right?
Go make your own friends. I'm like, sorry, you can have this one table, but I have no more tables for you. Sorry. And so you're finding the local game shop and you're finding the local library with other players who want to play. And they're teaching you how to play in a way that you're not the murder hobo. You know, that is the person who just wants to constantly do battle. And then the complete opposite where, I just want to role play the entire time and just, you know, do voices. Somewhere in the middle is the sweet spot. And that's how we teach them to play. We give them those levels of stuff. And so they're equipped with being a cool player that everybody wants at the table. And that's the fun part about it.
Sorry, out of curiosity, so like, and for our listeners who are into Dungeons and Dragons, obviously it's not something I've ever been into. But do people like dress up and put on like, it's like acting almost.
So it is cooperative storytelling. So a tabletop RPG is kind of like it's a board game that without a board. But we use a really cool tools like Talespire and Hero Forge minis. And so we create miniatures that look like how they want them to feel in that space. And we tell a story. And because it's a narrative story, it goes wherever the players and the games master wants it to go. And therefore, we can put them in situations that occur in the real world. And we can test their, you know, their capacity around engaging with things that they don't like happening to them.
Could you give me an example of something that you may have done in the past that would relate to, say, the real world? Just so I can picture it.
Okay, this is my favorite example, right? You are both players. You are both playing at my table. I am your dungeon master. You come across. And you have to get across, there's a mission that you're trying to achieve. You have an objective, and the objective is on the other side of this bridge. You come across this bridge, and it's a raging waters below it, and it's a good sturdy bridge over there. You see a disheveled guard standing over there, leaning on his post, tattered clothes. You need to get across. What do you say?
Oh, what do I say?
Yeah, what do you say?
I would have no idea. I'd probably who am I talking to?
The guard.
I'd probably be quite polite. I'd go, hey, look, I really need to get inside there. Can you please let me in, or else I'll get my mate Kevin here to because Kevin, you know Taekwondo, don't you, mate?
No.
You want to cross this bridge over here?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. If you want to cross this bridge over here, you pay the toll.
Oh, pay the toll, okay.
What's the next question? What do you ask?
Oh,
what do you ask next?
How much is the toll?
How much you got? Now, pause right there. What do you think about this character?
The character is quite, I'd say, assertive.
Okay, but what is he doing? He's asking you for money.
He's fleecing us.
There you go. And that's exactly what happens at the table. Some of the people go, oh, yeah, I have about 100 gold. Let me just pull out 100 gold and start give it to you. While the others go, dodgy as hell. Let me just pull out my bow and arrow and a combat session begins.
So you can shoot him.
Yeah. And so what happens is a case of you've not realized that this guy is dodgy. And so when you're But Kev has. And so Kev would go, I swing my axe or I pull out my bow and arrow and I shoot. And what tends to happen with these games is that because you're going to wait a week to come back and play with us next time, you're agonizing over this. Why didn't I pick up that behavior? Why didn't I realize that was some real dodgy behavior by this guard? Could I have, if I'd picked that up, would I have got my shot in there first? Could I have resolved it a different way? And just the way the game naturally builds itself, it causes aha moments with players.
Interesting.
And so you can do a whole bunch of different type of social interactions that causes them to interact in a different way. And sometimes you can go for something that looks big and ugly and, you know, scary, but it needs the soft touch approach. And so that's the beauty about TTRPGs. It is communication, just with clothing and with miniatures.
Yeah. And so, Will, your reaction there was a little autistic, actually.
A lot of autistic people would just
get the money out and give it to them and not realize they'd just been fleeced, you know.
And some people switch, but usually at that point in time, you see half of them go, no, wait, that's dodgy. And it's over the top, right? I've done the over the top kind of characterization. And all our games masters know to do all these different spaces. They know the stories. The stories are known to the games masters, not to the players. And so we are seeing this interaction multiple times. And what that tells me is that how people interacted with this space, we are writing notes. And when we're writing notes, we can tell you, comparatively speaking, this is what's happening in that interaction.
See, and I think you're right. Like, say if I was to now go back to that situation, now that I know that, I would definitely probably approach that a little bit differently, if that makes sense. Yeah, right. Totally. I get that.
And that can happen on a trip to, you know, Thailand or Bangkok, where people are having to, you know, be nefarious in different ways because of certain interactions. And therefore, you're more open to seeing those interactions now. And because you've had practice, and all these are is just practice and in a safe space where no one's actually making fun of you for doing that. It's a case of, I missed out on that shot, but I'll get it next time, right?
Totally. Yeah, totally. No, really good point. So why do you think neurodivergent people are so attracted to gaming, for example, do you think?
I don't know. So I always used to find that with just I found the world to be fairly difficult, right? So I found out last year that I have ADHD. Mm-hmm. And when I told people that I got diagnosed in March, hey, I just got diagnosed. And they were telling me, with what else? I'm like, what do you mean with what else? I just found out for the first time after 37 years of living that I have ADHD. Mm. And so I think some of the rules that we deal with in the space is that there's a lot of unwritten rules. And gaming allows us to kind of see what's coming and practice and engage. And there's value in that, especially because it's based on, yeah, you didn't get it right, but we're not going to penalize you. You can try again. And you can try again.
Yeah.
And the cliff is not as hard in real life, right? Right, Kev?
Yeah. I know for myself, I'm a big fan of like on open world games and like video games. And that's because you explore a world, you know, as a, you know, well, a bit green. You don't know the world, and you slowly get to know the world and learn things about it and the characters. And I find that did actually teach me, you know, valuable life skills growing up doing a lot of that.
And you can practice that in the safety of your house where no one's judging you and in front of a screen with like sensory tools allow you to interact in that space. But it has real world translation, and we've seen this. And when you do it well enough and with a group of people, intentionally, what we, the games that we tend to run is that we tend to run it with a group of people. So they realize it's not about in this world, you cannot survive by yourself. Just you make it so far, you cannot survive by yourself. It's a village, and you need to understand that people are diverse, and therefore you deal with diverse people to get to the outcome that you're all trying to achieve. And that's what D&D or Minecraft does as well. And so how we use Minecraft is every one of our players are excellent in Minecraft. Like they know everything about Minecraft. But what they're not good at is when you put four of them together and say, this is your city, build it up. And that's when if you go, oh no, I have to now deal with other people to build my Maccas in this part of the town. I have to. And it's when you have that type of space, that is a job in the state government.
We've frozen.
That's
up
project
there.
Management.
We've lost him. He's back.
This is the hands of movement. Making sure. But basically, the way that we implement our programs is that it almost doesn't matter what the game is. Is there a good nexus to employment? And is there a good nexus to skills that can be utilized? And so this is where we're moving in our next two areas, which is miniature painting, which is about hand dexterity and coordination and in a usable skill, and esports. And that's where we're going to, which is an impressively
difficult. Interesting. Like car racing and stuff like that.
Like League of Legends and like all those other ones, right? So we know how difficult esports can be to the neurodiverse space because it's a win and loss, right? And losses can feel intense. But I think we're at a stage in this company that we know how to support our participants well enough that we can actually do something cool as in, why don't you practice winning and practice losing? Because that's what we don't get to do, right? So
some really good leadership skills, right?
And you don't need to have the great fitness of being, you know, a rugby player or things of the nature without the injuries of that as well. You can still learn all those essential skills through esports. But the reason we're thinking about utilizing esports specifically is that the value of something like that is about how can I practice winning and how can I practice losing with dignity and with respect? Because me and my best friend are going to go for the same job and we work together in the same organization. One of us might get it and one of us might not. But guess what? I still need to be friends with this person, whether I win or I lose. So how do I do that? And how do I maintain a good relationship with someone that I've just kicked my butt, right? And vice versa. Because you can win the job, but then lose all the support structures in place that allow you to do your job effectively as well. So practicing winning correctly and practicing losing correctly is not something that neurodiverse people do or are exposed to do because, well, we have a lot of meltdowns, right? There's a meltdown issue for our space. So how do you get to that level? And how do you practice those essential skills? Gaming.
Yeah, totally. And I think we're actually seeing that a lot of workplaces are starting to utilize this type of gaming to help with that side of things as well. I think it's Microsoft is starting to use Minecraft to recruit people. Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's definitely something that's being used a lot of now to be able to help with that. Kev, was there something you wanted to say on that?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to get an idea of a bit more detail on the Minecraft side of things on like how they might need to work together to build up a village. Just a few examples.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so what we do with our Minecraft tournament, we have about 207 people playing Minecraft this term. We have like 100 tables of D&D in Minecraft, which is 100 concurrent tables in a term. And so what we do with this Minecraft server, and this is Dan's baby, right? So initially, after a year of playing D&D, I'm like, you know what we need to do? We need to do Minecraft. I'm like, what do you mean? And so after trying to do a trial on these things, we've identified what we need to do with Minecraft. Now, Minecraft is an open world space. We put a few structures around it so that we're not just people just biting at each other the entire time. We take away the PvP element of it. We take away some parts of Minecraft being a high-risk game, right? We make an exclusion zone around a small block of about six plots, which you end up with a house. You end up with your own personal plot to build your own house. But over 10 weeks, you not only have to build your house, you have to build this entire village around there. And in this village, you have to decide, well, what goes in your village? Do you need a town hall? Do you need a Macca's drive-through? Do you need a stable? And and the people over here decide what they put into this Minecraft world. And so what happens is that we end up with groups of different ages building their own cities with the same template, and then they look very very diverse after 10 weeks, and you can really see the progress over 10 weeks. And you can see a city go from barely any houses of their own to I have a metropolis, I have this, I have that, I need to now do this farm, and it's about them working together to achieve it. And so people tend to lend their skills. Some are good at farming, and so therefore they focus on that. And some are good at mining, and they focus on that. And then together they end up building up the township. And some people are really good builders. And then in addition to that, they go and do challenges. We have Quest City, and in that Quest City, they have to work together to complete these puzzles as well. So some of them are parkour type stuff. And some of the other things are you need to work together as a team to get past this puzzle, to get to the big boss and beat them, right? So a little bit of PvE, a little bit of puzzles. And then we look at other games. We find Minecraft is an ECMG, which is it's a new term like TTRPG. An ECMG is a exploratory cooperative multiplayer game. And and with that term that we built, we've engaged with Game to Grow in the US to teach our games masters how to manage a group of neurodiverse people in a digital environment inclusive of ECMGs. Now, when I think about ECMGs, it's not only Minecraft, but there's some cool ones like Satisfactory out there. I think there's Palia is going to be one of those type of games. And we look at all these new games that are coming out that you can utilize in a way that actually has learning benefits. So not every game is you don't use it for in that in as an ECMG, but there are some that work really well, right? So Roadblocks is also one, but I feel that's too similar to Minecraft for us to utilize. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool, cool. Just for anyone who is listening, we do have a few people listening. If you want to ask Dwayne some questions based on some of the stuff he's been covering, please feel free to reach out. I had a few people did say if this will be available to watch back later because they're not able to watch it all now. Yes, you will be able to if you go to our social media platforms or it will be uploaded onto our podcast later on today. So you are able to check that out there. But any questions you might have for Dwayne, please feel free to shoot them through. Hang on. I think we do have a question. We've got one person saying, what's the name of that game?
Minecraft.
Minecraft we're talking about? Yep. Cool, cool, yeah. Cool. All right.
So there's Minecraft and then there's Satisfactory, which is a new another one, which is basically you're building factories on this unknown alien planet, and you can do that individually or you can do that as part of a team. But yeah, but most games, if you can get cooperation happening without there being too much, physical, PvP, which is a player on player, you can get some really good cooperation and you can see some cool things happen. Being said, PvP definitely has a space, and this is why we aim to use it within an esports way. I'm very adamant of trying not to initially use any, first-person shooters. I'm a more of a team-based type space because more of a nexus to work or, employable skills more than a clicky finger.
Hang on. I think we've got someone else. No, not that one. Oh, the new one. So I'm assuming the new one is the one that you just said, right?
Satisfactory.
Satisfactory. Yeah. Okay, cool, cool. So Satisfactory. What are some of the psychological results of what you do for your users? What have you sort of been some outcomes you've sort of been seeing?
Sure. And this is the scales to whether you're physically in there with somebody or where you're absolutely remote. What we're seeing is that they're learning to make decisions in a safe space. Do I go and attack the town guard? Well, what happens if you do that? And what does that mean if you attack the police? So you don't get to do that space. You can roll some click clack dice and make some math skills happen. And so that's a bit of the stuff that we're seeing there. And they're socializing in a safe space. They're using their creativity and their imagination. There is this moment where we use a lot of rule of cool with regards to the space. And if a player comes up with an innovative solution, we roll with it because that's what storytelling is about, and getting those cool moments. There was once where this kid has used mending on a egg that's about to crack open and turn into this giant dragon. And it was combat mending, and everyone just lost their mind after those things occur. So you end up with all these hype moments and stories that they can relive and tell with other people. And it's those conversation pieces that leaves us and goes and practices elsewhere. I'm a big fan of people leaving us. My favorite story is when this group of, and it's a painful story because it took a lot of effort on our part, but that's what we're here for. This family, three children, all wanted to play on one table. And we play between 4 to 5 players on a table. I'm like, I know exactly where this is going. They bought all our books. They bought all, all the swag that they could. And in one term, they all played this adventure. They really enjoyed themselves, and then they left. I'm like, okay. And we knew it was coming, but can you guess where they went? Can you guess what happened?
No,
100% sure.
They went to start a family game.
Okay.
How amazing is that, right? The entire
That's cool.
The parents knew how to play D&D. The kids learned from us, and then they went, got all the books that they needed, and they started to play a family game. And that's like victory to us. That's what we want. We want
family
them to
bonding, eh?
That's it. And you can do some really cool things where what happens within the game also then translates to how you feel about the people in real life. Think about like a dungeon master that has you know, done an unfair call to you. How much do you hate that guy, Chris? Mm. That's an actual guy for me. He's damn you, Chris. But yeah, it's emotions, right? Because it's the hype of the space, and it's all those practicing those emotions that actually cause you to make friends and get out there and do cool things, and then want to try it out in the real world. And we want that for them.
Hmm.
Yeah, awesome. No, that's good. And it's interesting to see that some of these things are evolving that you haven't even planned for, and it's just happening. Do you know what I mean? Which is really cool, I think.
Sure. We kind of know that these patterns occur. Okay. And it's because we're now at that stage. Initially, it was a case of, that's a cool new thing. That's a cool new thing. Yeah. But we start to see the patterns of behavior. And so we know these things are coming. And so therefore, we're prepared for these things. And we encourage them, right? And but that's the thing about when you run last term, we ran for 2,200 hours of gaming in 10 weeks. So that is 3.4 months of gaming in 10 weeks. So we are seeing these interactions, and we have had zero cancellations in the sense that we do not cancel a single table. We haven't done that since 2019, since we started, because we have such good processes in place and some awesome games masters in place and some awesome support staff, such as our guild master and our master at arms and our manager multitasking. Fun titles for fun gaming company.
Interesting. So, you know, you've spoken about how you've picked up all these, you know, you're able to see certain things. You've spoken a little bit, but what are your plans for the future? Do you plan to, you know, you've spoken about esports a little bit there, all of that, but, you know, I remember when we were speaking to you, so you were talking about people are starting to think about doing some research on what you guys are doing and stuff like that. Well, what's the plans for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And we see the value of this, of all the work that we're doing, and we write reports in a really cool way. And South Australia University has come on board, and we've done a white paper on explaining how we play D&D and role-playing games that actually add value to the neurodiverse community. And so you can find that on our website. It is called Can Tabletop Role-Playing Games Promote Social Growth in Their Players? And Dr. Susie Emery has done this amazing piece of work with us to help drive these changes, right? And showcase what we're seeing. Now, quite recently, and this is just recent history, we've gone through the process of how our players get funded for these things. And we got a ruling quite recently telling us that our program and the way that we run it is required and necessary as per the NDIS test for our clients who are on the spectrum. And who would have thought that's the case when we started this business in 2019, that our program would be considered, you know, necessary, RNN, necessary and necessary. I forget the RNN terminology, but it's the, but basically okay, it's it basically it's required. Something that is built. Yeah. Required and necessary. Yeah. That's one for social growth for people on the spectrum. And this research piece is something that demonstrates that as well. But in addition to that, we're always looking at expanding our programs, looking at expanding into STEM-based programs, and looking at some interesting in-person programs with a brand like Minds at Play. It's about how do we get people interacting and doing things really interestingly. Minds at Play is that the reason we did esports is because we did some awesome work with Griffith University on their inclusivity at play process. And we were thinking about how do we get people who are at home playing games to start doing exercise. That's where this esports process came from. It's a case of, well, they're already with me. They're playing with me. I need to encourage them to go and do some exercise. And we can do that with gaming incentives. Games are already built with incentives in them. You just need to trigger it for sweat. And so that becomes the fun part. And so how do we convert that into a program that people can do? This is where that esports parts become a bit of a thing. Or also, do you give people benefits for gaming that make their gaming life better, but also make their physical life better? And that became some of the other fun stuff in there.
Cool.
Yeah, no. Hey, I've got, am I pronouncing your name correct? Is it Sasha Evans? Is that, am I pronouncing that? Yeah, great. Thanks, Kevin, for giving. I'm so crap at names. So Sasha's just asked, how many young people did you work with over the 10 weeks? So what you were talking about before. And the reason why Sasha's asking this, she also posted up something else before, and she said, thank you for this. I have to go. I run a business in the UK that supports mental health of neurodivergent young people and their parents. We run online gaming clubs as well as psychoeducation courses to empower young people to find their strengths. Would love to connect. So
how many people do we have up and running? So like we said, when we started, it was just four players. Right now, it's 447 players starting this term. And over a 10-week process, it's all age groups. We have a good age groups are 8 to 12, 13 to 15, 16 to 18, and then 19 plus. And we keep them at separate age groups because the language at 8 to 12 is different to over 18. Same adventure, different language. And so what that allows people to do is kind of make friends in the right type of spaces. So our biggest bubble is between that 8 to the children and the teenager group, right? And then there's a good spacing of young adults and adults in general. I think the oldest person that we've had was 47 or 67, who I think they're doing mini painting with us this time.
Cool. Yeah, cool, man. Sounds like you've got some really amazing stuff happening. But, you know, you even said to us when we first met up, so for people listening, Dwayne and I live in Sydney. We've never actually caught up, but we've caught up only via... Yeah, totally. But, you know, you've got a fair few staff now. I think how many people did you say working for you now?
So was it 32 or? Games masters, right? So
yeah,
we hire people through our interview process. And our interview process is, take a guess.
They probably is through playing the game, right?
Yeah. They're running D&D for us, right? And and they're doing it because if you can run Dungeons & Dragons the way that we like it and the way that we need it for our programs, I can teach you administration. We can give you the tools that you need and scale you up, right? And when we first started, the first person we were replacing was ourselves, and everybody who comes in is better than me as a dungeon master. And so these games masters run D&D, they run Minecraft, they have skills in mini painting. And what has occurred is that they've gone from games masters to now the supervisor role being the guild masters to the master at arms, who is Brian. He's probably listening. And he manages now 32 staff and two guild masters. And we have Mom, the manager of multitasking, who basically helps all the players get registered and gets them all organized and make sure all the social media is up and running. And this time last week, we've hired our first operational manager, and we call them the quartermaster. And the quartermaster is basically there to replace me and Dan from doing the work of managing this amazingly large team now and kind of allowed to scale. But with regards to the reason why we have such teams in place is that they all have a focus on supporting the player. The games masters are there to support the player. The guild masters are there to support the games masters, refine their skills and get stronger. The master grams are there to support. It's all based on support structures, and this is why we've been able to scale really well. And that's what I've been enjoying about this amazing business is that I aim to see 1,000 concurrent players, which is an insane goal. It's an insane goal to have. 1,000 gauge.
Yeah, that is amazing.
And it's an insane goal to have, but it allows you to then fix problems before it occurs. And so we know where we're going to have bottlenecks and what those bottlenecks are, and therefore, what do I need to do? We used to paint miniatures in individual. We used to paint digital miniatures and upload them to Tailspire. And we're like, that was a 20-minute process per mini, times at 150 minis. And that was the dedication of the staff. And then here comes along Hero Forge with a process that allows us to get in there. And we then partner with them to add that as a standard process. And that's what we love. People see the value of what we do, and they partner with us so that we can just add that value. And we try to stay as efficient and cost-effective so that people can utilize these things at scale, right? And so that's why we do what we do. And our staff love being professional games masters. That's what their title is. And that's
That's probably quite a difficult thing to become a professional games master, right? And they're making really that happen. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Kev, did you have anything else you wanted to ask Wayne? Had some really good questions come through.
Is there a careers section on your website? I'm just going to take a look.
There is. There's a play with us, and then there's a work with us. But I think we've just pulled down the job advertising section. Us, and within that space, it's work with us as jobs. And in there, it tells you how to apply. It's a fairly simple section to do so. Our staff are made up of 50% people with disability, 50% women, 28% LGBTQIA, and the rest are pale, male, and stale, right? But and so this is the fun part about our organization. It can be very diverse, and we have staff in almost we've never physically seen, right? We eventually catch up with them, but most of the time when I physically see them, we take a picture and going, I validate this is a real human. And that becomes the ongoing joke about the way we operate, and our remote play style like works really well.
Awesome stuff, man. It's been so great having you come on today and chat with us and share everything you've been talking about. It's been good that there's been a few people comment through all of that. I actually shared your link on through the comments, all that, because there was a few people asking about it. So I really hope some people can get in contact with you. But more than anything, where can people connect with you or even sign up to what you're doing?
Yep. So mindsaplay.com.au. There is a Play With Us tab, and you can literally go through the process of registering to come play with us. We're always interested in people who are interested in making the world a more inclusive place. And so you can talk to me about inclusive accessibility, so about inclusive infrastructure, serviceability, employment. That's always a way you can reach out and say, hey, I would like to talk to you about bits and pieces. Because through this process of making one gaming inclusive, we're also able to make employment more inclusive. And if we do it well enough, we can make society fairly inclusive, not only for neurodiverse people, but for the entire spectrum of disability. Yeah. And just generally society.
Yeah. Amazing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Photon John, did you have anything else? You're all cool, my man.
I am good. I have a feeling you may hear from some of my friends when jobs open up.
Yeah, totally. But Dwayne, thank you so much for coming on, sharing this, sharing a little bit of your story. You know, I think it's so important that we're finding these safe spaces and other ways for people to connect. I think it's so important, and the work you're doing is just unbelievable. So thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, this work is very easy to do because it's a lot of fun. And the objective is that we all get to have fun together. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem, my man. Awesome. Well, thank you for all of our listeners listening through today. My name's Will Wheeler, joined by my main man, Photon John. Thank you so much to Dwayne Fernandez for coming on today. And for more podcasts, please check out theopenheartedsociety.com. Until next time, thanks very much.
Take care.